Okay, well, thank you very much, Roger, and thanks for everybody for coming. I mean, I find it fantastically moving to look at that film, because you just think about the number of people who demonstrated on that day. I mean, I feel particularly moved about Adrian Mitchell, who makes the performance poem at the end, because, of course, he's since died. A few years ago, he died. But one of the greatest modern poets, and somebody who I first heard when I was a teenager in the 1960s at a Movement for Colonial Freedom fundraising concert, and he performed that same poem about Vietnam. And you know, you think about the continuity of all this, that somebody who then in the 60s was writing these marvellous poems, and who then right back all those years later is performing it for this huge crowd in Hyde Park. And I think it's very important we keep hold of that, because to me, seeing that kind of the demonstration, there's so many things you do think about, and I'm sure those of us who were on the demonstration, which is probably most of us here, or a lot of us here, you do think of all these different kind of elements of it. But what keeps coming back to me, really, is that, you know, because you always get this stuff now, we didn't stop the war, 10 years on, we didn't stop the war, is there any point in protest? This is the whole argument they put to us. In my view, that was a movement not just against one war, but a movement for democracy, a movement to hold the politicians to account, a movement about people in a country that most of us had no connection with, a long, long way away. It was about all of those things, and therefore, to me, it was an incredibly important movement for hope and for change and for achieving something which we couldn't achieve through the politicians. And remember, when you look at these crowds of people, remember when you look at 2 million, the two main parties in this country supported the war. Tony Blair bullied and bribed a whole number of his own MPs. Many of them did rebel against him, but he bribed and bullied them for days and days. His wife was in Parliament for days and days trying to persuade people, Labour MPs, to vote in favour of the war. The Tories, as usual, of course, lined up for the war anyway. They didn't have much of a rebellion on their side. And although the Liberal Democrats did oppose the war before it started, once it started, they too joined in the war. So it's even more remarkable that so many of us turned out on the streets and so many of us did this. And one of the things that makes me really angry about all this is the idea that somehow we're the people who support dictators. There was nobody on that march who went there because they supported dictators. There was nobody there who wanted people to suffer repression. They went because they knew that whatever the terrible things that Saddam Hussein or any of the other dictators in the Middle East had done, what our government was going to do was to make things far, far worse. And we were absolutely right about this. I take as my evidence of this the Guardian newspaper, which some of you, I'm afraid I still do read it every day. Their editorial today tells us we were right to demonstrate. That wasn't what they said 10 years ago. They said now they're saying the marchers were right. Nobody says, apart from a few right-wing neocon nutcases, nobody now says that we were wrong about the basic politics of things. Everybody knows there was no weapons of mass destruction. Everybody knows that terrorism, far from being dealt with, has spread as a result of the Afghanistan and Iraq wars. Everybody knows that those things are true. And everybody knows that Tony Blair is one of the biggest liars that has walked the earth. If you look at his job now as envoy for peace in the Middle East, you know, I wonder who checked out his CV for that one, because it does seem to me it's a remarkable appointment for anybody to make. A man who's made £50 million since that war in Iraq, one of the wealthiest people in this country. He is somebody who, in my view, should be in The Hague and should be on trial for war crimes, not going around making money and telling people in the Middle East, the Palestinians, how they should live their lives and what they should be doing. I think it's absolutely disgraceful. And there's a huge democratic deficit that opened up there, and this is what we're still living with. You know, I was doing a radio interview before the meeting, and the guy on there was saying, but, you know, shouldn't you just elect people every 4 or 5 years and they'll do it for you? But we know it doesn't work with the question of war. We know it doesn't work with the question of austerity. We know that now it's regarded as a luxury to have a two-bedroom flat and to live on benefits. You're not allowed to do that anymore. We know all these attacks are coming on. It's not just the attacks about war and about peace. We know all these things have happened. So therefore, it opens up this democratic deficit. And I think that if you look at what governments are now doing, if you look at what our government is doing, David Cameron is following Tony Blair. Now, he's very, very careful, if you notice. The war in Libya, this isn't going to be like Iraq. We're just going to bomb people from 30,000 feet rather than have troops on the ground. In Mali, where he has sent 300 troops to back up the French intervention there, you notice the old colonial powers are going back into Africa. Surely nothing to do with the reserves of oil and gas and uranium in these areas, but they're all going back into these countries. Nothing to do with Iraq. It won't be like Iraq. When they talk about Syria and Iran, they talk about remote control wars, or they want to have remote control wars. In fact, if you look at drone warfare today, in my view, the development of drone warfare is actually a result of our success in the sense of building such opposition to that much more conventional war. So it's not that they're giving up on war, they're spending our money on finding even worse weapons of destruction, which somebody in the Arizona desert or indeed in an RAF base in Lincolnshire can operate remote control and kill people in Pakistan, in Yemen, in Somalia, in all sorts of other places around the world, which most MPs are probably couldn't even find on a map, is the honest truth about the matter. So we've got all these things continuing, and it seems to me we're facing something of a turning point politically about this. We did this 10 years ago. I'm sure everybody here is still as committed to doing all these things, and if we have to march in those numbers again, we will march in those numbers again. But it's also true that we are beginning to find, you know, when I look at the world today, you begin to think to yourself, are we going to go on forever with these wars? Are we going to go Afghanistan? Nobody knows how many people have died in Afghanistan. A NATO airstrike the day before yesterday killed dozens of women and children. It makes this much in the newspapers and doesn't even make the television and radio news. That is simply the fact of the matter. They have these wars and they want to close down anybody knowing anything about what happens in them. Unless, of course, it's somewhere where they want to intervene, where they give you days and days of, you know, terrible atrocities that are happening. Terrible atrocities are happening, but many of them are carried out by our government, by the American government, by all these people. And I think that we now have a series of questions that we have to ask ourselves, and we have to think about how we link the anti-war movement with some of these other movements. I know you have a demonstration here in Newcastle tomorrow against austerity and against the cuts. And we know what is happening. You know, when you hear about the terrible, I don't know if people heard on the radio the other day, the terrible care that old people are getting in their homes, where they have eight different carers coming in for 15 minutes that don't have time to talk to them because they're being timed by some privatised company. They're not allowed to talk to them. They're not allowed to pick up their mail and give them their mail. They're not allowed to do any of these things. You know, if we stop the war in Afghanistan, every old person in this country could have luxury care at the end of their lives for the rest of their lives. If we got rid of Trident, we could actually provide all the education and healthcare and all the things that people really need. And therefore, it's about thinking about some of these alternatives as well. And, you know, it's very interesting today in the Guardian as well. No doubt this is what triggered the editorial. And even then, the Guardian manages to get its graphic totally wrong. So finds that 55% of people polled believe the anti-war marches were wrong. Actually, when you read what they say, 55% of people polled believe that anti-war marches were right 10 years ago. We were right to demonstrate, we were right to do those things. Only 28% thought we were wrong. Now, actually, very interestingly in The Guardian, it says that this is across the social scale. You know, in other words, you know, how you divide it, A, B, C, D. The way they divide up the social classes. But actually, they say the area where there is a crushing anti-war majority is among working class voters. In other words, the people who are directly affected by war, the poorest people who are having their benefits cut, the people whose children are dying in Afghanistan and will die in future wars if these people have their ways, these are the people who are more and more opposed to the war. And therefore, I think it's a fantastic thing tonight that this is a meeting which is called not just by the Stop the War, but by Unison and by the Martin Luther King Society. I think it is very, very important we make all these different links. We had a conference last weekend in London, which was very successful, and I think took some of us by surprise in terms of the age of lots of the young people there, the diversity of it, the size of the demonstration of the rally. And in fact, I think when you look at the diversity of the anti-war movement, it actually stands very favourable comparison with many, many meetings and movements on the left. And it's very, very important that we have always involved the Muslim community. We do involve other communities and so on in it. And I think we need to begin to pull all these strands together, because, you know, if there's one thing that could have stopped the war 10 years ago, I always thought, would have been widespread strike action. And we, you know, people say we didn't do it, we just marched. Now, everybody who was involved in it knows we didn't just march. We marched and marched and marched. We also occupied city centres, we sat down in the roads, the school students went out on strike. And on the day war broke out, tens of thousands of workers went out on strike as well, for an hour or 2 hours or 3 hours. We had walkouts all over the country, on a small scale, all of them unofficial, all of them without obviously any legal sanction and all this kind of thing. The thing that could have stopped it then, to my mind, would have been a huge movement of strike action. We didn't achieve that then. I don't think the movement was at that level then. And to be honest, we still haven't achieved that over the questions of cuts and austerity and attacks on working living standards, even 10 years on. But if we can bring together this movement against war, against imperialism, with the movement against austerity, then we have a really powerful movement which can challenge the government, hopefully bring down this absolutely bloody awful government, and can actually start dictating an agenda, having an agenda which is about us deciding how we want the money to be spent, us deciding who should be paying more taxes and, you know, who should pay any tax at all, Starbucks and people like that who don't. You know, those are the kind of questions that we need to be addressing, and that is why it's very, very important we keep this movement going. And just to conclude, I hope that everybody tonight will, you know, commit themselves to organising, to being part of this campaign, to doing all these kind of things. We cannot let war and militarism be something that we ignore, because if we do that, the warmongers just carry on and carry on. And we have to say the vast majority of people in this country are against it. The vast majority of people in this country want something different, and we have to campaign and fight until we achieve that. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Lindsay.